Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Loy Cole is an English singer, songwriter, and musician who is based in the United States. He was lead vocalist of Loy Cole and the Commotions from 1984 to 1989 and subsequently worked solo. 16 albums and nearly 40 years into his illustrious career, Loy Cole is exploring what the 21st century version of what a singer-songwriter is. Although best known for guitar-oriented music with Loy Cole and the Commotions and a long line of acclaimed solo records, Loy continues to navigate the music industry by releasing successful singles, albums, and touring the world over. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Loy Cole. Where do we find you in the world, and how are you doing?
I'm in my studio, which is in the attic of my house in Western Massachusetts, in North America. And I'm doing okay, thank you.
That's good. Okay, so now I know it's been a multi-generational, a decade time or period in the music world. So the hybrid story of yours in the music world. So what age did you decide, cool, you want to be in this music world, and how did that journey progress?
Well, I think as soon as I saw David Bowie and T-Rex on television when I was 11 and 12, I think I thought, that's what I want to be. I think it was always in the back of my mind from then. I think I spent most of my adolescence reading music magazines as a form of apprenticeship, studying my heroes. But I didn't really do anything about it until I was about 21 or 22 and started writing songs in earnest and working with Blair Cowan, who I formed the Commotions with.
And why did you choose the name The Commotions?
For want of a better idea, which is quite often the case. In retrospect, I suppose we thought maybe we should have thought of a band name because we were very much a band. But at the beginning, it was me pulling everything together, so it made sense. I still think it's kind of a crappy name.
And now, okay, so you joined the band, and then how did those, the next steps of you creating, and then when did, from that point, how long was it period before you guys started reaching the world and people started taking notice?
Everything happened quite quickly. The first incarnation of the band, I think I envisaged it was going to be something more like what Scritti Politti or the Style Council were doing, because I was a huge Isaac Hayes fan and I thought I could sing like Aretha Franklin. But I couldn't really, not very well. But still, we developed quite a big following and a lot of record companies were interested in us. But I think the key moment for us was when we were recording what was supposed to be our debut single, which is a song from our set called Down at the Mission, not the same as Down on Mission Street. And we had to record a B-side. We spent probably about a week trying to get the A-side sounding right. And then we quickly knocked off this B-side in about, I don't know, very quickly. And it was called Are You Ready to Be Heartbroken? And it took us several weeks to come to terms with the fact that this song that we created very quickly was actually much better than the one that we'd spent a whole week laboring over. And also it was something that was very much ours. We weren't sounding like anybody else. And as soon as we had that sort of revelation that, oh, we can do this, then I wrote Perfect Skin and Forest Fire sometime during the next month. We demoed them. We signed with Polydor Records and Perfect Skin was released as a single within the next few months.
So you said earlier that you started writing songs at the age of 21, 22. Was that just something that was natural to you, or did you have to learn the skill over time?
I think you have to learn the skill. I don't think it was natural. I think it was only natural to me because that's what people who are pop stars did. They wrote their own songs for the most part, and therefore I had to learn how to do that.
So you've been releasing music for a number of years, number of decades. What keeps motivating to create and write and release?
I still have the same motivations, very similar motivations to the early days. I want to make beautiful pieces of art that enrich people's lives in the way that my heroes' art enrich my life. It's quite simple, really. As long as I'm waking up in the morning with ideas going around in my head for new songs, then I'm stuck doing it anyway. So, I mean, there is a part of me which does look forward to the day that I don't wake up with a song going through my head. It is akin to a form of torture sometimes.
Why do you say that?
Because you can't escape from music. It's always there. Sometimes I have a few things in my life through which I can escape from music. I play golf. I cycle. I do some yoga type things. And if I have my mind focused on those things, sometimes they take me away from music, but other times I'm cycling, thinking about the song that I'm trying to finish right now.
Okay, I get it.
If I have a particularly engaging game of golf, sometimes it can take me completely away from music. And it is lovely to have a break because when you come back to it, it's more exciting. When you're working with the same idea stuck in your head for weeks and weeks and weeks, but it's not anywhere near being finished, that's when it's more of a form of torture.
I understand. So when those moments of being stuck in the period of time, that's a long process to hit the nail on the head, so to speak, in inverted commas. Do you ever think, okay, I'm throwing it out, or do you keep focusing on it until you get it to what you'd like it to be?
I get it to the point where I can tell whether I should throw it out or not. And that point is, and sometimes you'll have a piece of music and you'll be very excited by it, and you still can't quite get it right. And sometimes it takes years, decades sometimes. One of the songs on my most recent album is an idea that Blair, the keyboard player, wrote in 1983.
Oh, wow.
And I never thought that this could be something I could sing on because it has a very strange time signature. At the same time, I always thought it had a beautiful melody. And he revisited it recently and said, "What do you think of this now?" I said, "Well, it's lovely." In 1983, I didn't have access to computers in the way I do now. So with the computer, I was able to look at the construction of the piece, and I was able to map out a way that I could make a vocal melody work with it. I still had to create a sort of almost a second rhythmical structure that led me to understand how to sing over it. But this was something that would have been impossible in 1983.
Okay, so now you've referenced that in computers and the generational decades of being in the industry. How has music evolved over time in your perception and in your mind?
I don't think music itself has evolved
Okay.
very much at all. I think the sounds that we have access to, the beats that are fashionable from year to year, change. But music itself, I think, still functions in the same way that it did when I was getting started, and the same way it did when I was a child. I suppose the one thing that is different is the way it works in the economy. People were willing to pay a lot more money for music when I was a little boy.
Yes.
And now it seems that the only thing that people are willing to pay a great deal of money for is a video game.
So you've referenced this. I love this segue. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys to say thank you for all the hard work that you're doing. I love the booklet, the thank yous, the whole experience of deciding, cool, I'm going to get this CD this month and the whole unpackaging, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, vinyls, cassettes, even cassettes, can you believe, are making a massive comeback. Cassettes on a smaller scale, but vinyl specifically and CDs. But we've also got the streaming platforms, and you referenced the payment of people willing to pay for music. So what are your observations or perceptions of the digital way people consume and the physical? Is there a preference in your land?
I think that the thing with streaming that is particularly ironic is it became the dominant method of consumption of music just around a point in time when we actually finally were able to make CDs sound really good and we figured out how to package them. I mean, no wonder people hated CDs in the early days. Those awful jewel cases that broke. Shattered if you drop them. But, we found that we could make them into these little mini albums with very, very green cardboard cases that were able to be shipped around the world very inexpensively because they were so light and they were also very difficult to damage when you compare to vinyl, for example. I think that the CD was wonderful in the fact that it was compact. But it was still something that you could have and hold. If it could come back into vogue, I would be very happy. But I do understand the convenience of having your music in your phone. I don't do it myself. I still have a 2004 iPod, which I synchronized to my computer. I use a program called Swinscian, which behaves very much like iTunes did in the early 2000s. As soon as iTunes started becoming Apple Music, I stopped using it. I found it offensive, to be honest. It was in my face with trying to sell me stuff, trying to tell me what I should listen to. I didn't want that. I wanted something that might work like the sidebar in YouTube is useful to me because when I'm finding something in YouTube that I'm enjoying, the sidebar offers me suggestions based on what I'm listening to, and those suggestions are quite often useful. I never found any such thing with Apple's Genius. Never found it useful at all, so I don't use it. I don't use Spotify because I hate the CEO. So I use Tidal just because I don't want to use Spotify. And like you, I want my money to go to the artist. So most of the time, these days I do tend to buy digital music, but I buy it on Bandcamp because I know the money will go to the artists. And it's very frustrating that my record company won't work with Bandcamp. I wish people could buy my record through Bandcamp, but it's complicated.
What's interesting is last year I decided, cool, I hadn't had a CD player for a while because I was living overseas, came back, et cetera, et cetera. But okay, I want to get a CD player. I want to listen to my CDs. And everyone's like, you're not going to be able to find a CD player. They don't sell them anywhere. And there's a sort of a, like an Amazon sort of delivery shop in South Africa called Takealot. I thought, okay, I'm going to have one or two options. I went in and there were hundreds of options to choose from. I had to narrow it down and narrow it down and narrow it down again. And I'm so excited to listen to my CDs compared to the digital. The sound quality is so fantastic. I'm like, I feel like I'm at a big stadium concert compared to when I listen to it on the digital. It's fantastic.
Well, there is something about, there is something about putting a record in to be played as well, and a CD works in that manner. It's a little easier. I mean, there was something lovely about the LP in that you had round about 20 minutes, and that was the maximum you could listen to any time before you had to go and physically turn it over or choose something else. And I think there's something quite nice about that period of time, that amount of music before having a little break. I think some of us still think about that when we're making albums as CDs. Quite often we'll have a little bit of a longer break after the fourth or fifth track on the in the sequencing. So one of the things that's a little frustrating to myself and a lot of artists who still make what we would like to think of as albums is that when it goes into Spotify, it goes into your playlist, and the order that we wanted you to listen to the songs in becomes possibly defunct. And so I always, when I have a new album coming out, I always ask my people, I said, please at least listen to it once in the order that I'm presenting it to you, you know.
So tell us more about the latest album you just released. I know it, I think it was from March last year. Tell us a little unpacking of that, and are you creating a new body of work that will be coming out anytime soon?
Came out in June last year.
Oh,
It's
June, sorry,
called,
yes.
yeah, it's, I think maybe the first single may have been in March. A single in inverted commas. It was never printed. It's called On Pain, and it's very much the second album in my, I suppose, journey into can I make electronic music with songs? I've made electronic music instrumentally in the past, but I never really fully embraced it as a medium for my songs and as something to go with my voice. So, in 2019, I released Guesswork, which was my first electronic songs album. And it took me, gosh, it took me a couple of years to actually get started on that record because I think I knew how difficult it was going to be, and I knew it was going to be one of those albums that I would mostly have to make up here in the attic on my own. And I sort of promised myself I was never going to make any more of those records because they're so exhausting, and they're so emotionally draining because I'm on my own. It's a lot more fun to make records with a bunch of musicians, but when you're exploring, can I do this and can I not do that? Unless you're an actual band, you can't do it with other musicians. You have to be on your own. You have to be failing and failing and failing until you succeed. So Guesswork was the record that made me understand that I can make electronic music for singing. And On Pain was the next step. And all I was really trying to do with On Pain was to take the same ideas and distill them further. So I wanted to make the expansive sounds more expansive. And I wanted to make the minimalist arrangements even more minimalist. And I suppose I feel like I succeeded more with the first idea, the expansive sounds. And I feel like with my next record, I want to go further with the minimalist. There's a band called Sylvan Esso. Do you know them?
I'll have to look them up, but you educating me now.
Yeah, Sylvan Esso. It's just a. It's two. There's two of them. They're American, and it's a guy with a computer and a woman with a microphone, and he is managing to make these beautiful arrangements with so little instrumentation: a drum machine, one or two synthesizers, and a voice, and yet it still sounds beautiful in the way that, say, The Jam sounded beautiful with only three instruments. So I've never been very good at that. And so I suppose one of the things that keeps me going with music, along with wanting to bring beauty in the world, is to try and have new challenges. And for me, making a very spare record is a challenge.
You referenced that it took you a couple of years to dive into guesswork because you knew it would be difficult and hard. So having achieved that, was it easier then to dive into the latest offering of Pain, or was it still okay, challenging because you knew how hard the previous one was?
No, it was a lot easier
Okay.
in that respect, in that I didn't have to overcome the fear factor.
Okay.
But it wasn't easy. And also, beginning the record, I started the process when I got sent home, when the touring for Guesswork was cancelled because of COVID.
Yeah.
So I got home in March of 2020, and I started work on what became On Pain, but I didn't work for very long because after a few months I started thinking, we don't know when this is going to end. We don't know how long we're going to be locked down for. If I don't make some money, we're going to run out of money and we might lose our house. So I started doing sort of cottage industry things here that really weren't anything to do with the record. And I put the record aside for almost a year, and
Okay.
I spent a lot of time up here in the attic making videos for people to watch on the Patreon page that I started. And I started selling handwritten lyrics to people all around the world just to pay the mortgage. So On Pain had a sort of false start, and I didn't really go back to working on it in earnest until we could see that lockdown wasn't going to be forever, and we could see that we were eventually going to get back to whatever the new normal was going to be
Yeah.
called. So yeah, it wasn't easy, and it was also different to any record I'd made before, because I'd never started a record and then had to completely abandon it and then go back to it. I think possibly that may have helped, having a year away, then going back and looking at what I'd achieved in those first few months. I think having that amount of distance from the creative process can be useful.
So you referenced earlier that you've got these various hobbies, that golfing ex and so cycling, that allows you to sometimes switch off for the music. So to that point, do you ever, when you listen to songs or music by other artists, do you listen to music? First question. And second question, are you able to relax and listen to it, or is your technical creative brain unpacking what they have created?
That's a good question. I do listen to music by other artists. I try to listen maybe a little bit more these days than I did maybe a couple of years ago. I can't really be listening to other people's music when I'm making an album. I feel like I need to be focused on what I'm doing. And I think most of us are also a little bit afraid of copying somebody else's idea accidentally.
Yes.
If you start listening to their record, you might start putting their ideas into your record without realizing you're doing it. So I think a lot of us like to work in a something like a musical vacuum when we are creating, but when we're not creating, when we're just sort of collecting ideas for the next record, which is where I'm at right now. Yeah, sure, I'm listening to lots of stuff. I would say that the music that's most difficult for me to listen to is the music which is most similar to my music.
Okay.
Because when I hear something that sounds like something I might have been able to make, then yes, it's impossible for me not to sort of put my producer's hat on and go, oh, that's brilliant, but why did they do that? Whereas you don't really want to be thinking, why did they do that when you're
Yeah.
listening to music? I think what you want to be thinking is, oh, that's beautiful, or oh, that's rubbish. Those are the terms that you would like to be thinking in. I have discovered one kind of music in the last couple of years which has been a help to me, and it's something that I didn't think existed. There's a genre of modern classical music that a lot of people refer to as drone music. And it long, quite often you maybe describe them as ponderous pieces that evolve very slowly. I found that I can listen to these pieces while I'm doing something else.
Go.
I never could do that with music before because music would always take the whole of my brain and make me want to focus on it. A bit like, if you're sitting in a bar and you're talking to your friends and the television comes on, it's like a
Yes.
magnet. You can't not look at it. It keeps pulling you away from what you want to be doing. Well, music is like that for the most part with me, that it pulls me away from what I'm trying to focus on. But this drone music, I'm finding I can put it on when I'm doing exercises, or I can put it on when I'm doing boring tax, when I'm crunching numbers at the desk. I can actually have some music on and I'll still be able to focus on the music. So it's been quite a nice new thing in my life. There's a woman, American composer called Callie Malone. She has a new album that just came out. I think she's quite wonderful, and I'm really excited to have discovered her. For me, she's well known around the world, but I've only just discovered her the last year or so.
Diving straight into the next game or question. I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 2 years, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Well, Kelly Malone is top of my brain right now because I just mentioned her. So I would probably play my favorite piece of her, which is called Does Spring Hide Its Joy? Top of my brain also, because of Twitter interaction we had this week, was the singles chart from early in 1972 when Telegram Sam by T-Rex was number one. That was the second single I ever bought as a child with my own money. The first single that I ever bought was number three, which was Have You Seen Her by the Shy Lights, which is a Chicago soul group at the time. So those two are close to the front of my mind. I suppose close to the front of my mind, listening to new things. I finally got around to listening to Spirit of Eden by Talk Talk, thinking that I might finally like it. I'm still not sure if I do or not. But I am listening to it, and I'm going to listen to it a few times and live with it and see, is it for me? And I would say in that respect, I also have made a note of wanting to listen to the entire catalogue of a band whose name I've now forgotten. There's that awful thing, well, you're younger, but there's this thing when you get older with names. And sometimes when you just forget the name of it, you know exactly who it is. Give me one. Actually, I can go and find it. I'll be 1 second. See, I already started listening and started making notes. It's Death Cab for Cutie. Some of the songs from the early 2000s and early 2010 that I've heard, I really like. So I felt like they're a band that I should deep dive and try and find all of their good songs. I recently did that with Steely Dan.
So you said Death Cab for Cutie, correct? A nice mix. A couple I need to add to mine, which are not there as yet. So, Lloyd, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So, as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.